Come on in. Happy Easter, everyone. Happy you're here. See some new faces, met some new people this morning. If you're here for the first time, you know, just relax. I always tell people, you know, we never lock the doors. All right? So if this gets painful, you can just walk right out of here, you know? Glad you're here. I'm Jeff. You know, I was five when my parents got divorced. And so my mom took full custody of us kids. My two sisters and I had one older, one younger. And growing up in a house full of women, it was a wonderful thing. It was a wonderful thing. Look at all these women going on. My mom did an amazing job shouldering the brunt of that parenting load. But probably that situation is why Mr. Klein was such a hero to me. Mr. Klein was my best friend's dad. I was in grade 3 when I met him. Matt invited me over to his place after school. And that evening, I met Mr. Klein. Mr. Klein was everything I thought a dad should be. I love my dad. Don't get me wrong. I think my dad is amazing. But at that point in time, Mr. Klein, he blew my mind. He could throw a football. He'd come out and throw the football with us. He took such an interest in us kids. Like, I just remember him involving me in conversations as a grade 3. I didn't think I wasn't used to being involved in. You know, he'd ask my opinion and stuff. Well, Jeff, what do you think about this? Come over here. We're thinking about getting some furniture over here. Tell me what you... And I'm like, oh, I like that one. Sure. I felt so important when I was with Mr. Klein. Mr. Klein was just one of those guys that, we'd always be hanging around the Klein house. I always wanted to be around there. And I always loved it when I heard Mr. Klein was coming home from work. Like, I was just like, I couldn't wait to see him. You would mess up. We were goofing around down the basement one time. We broke a lamp. I broke the lamp. And I was just like, I was so devastated thinking about what Mr. Klein would say. And when he found out, I remember him saying, "Who broke the lamp?" And I was just like, oh my God, here we go. I'm sorry it was me, Mr. Klein. He's like, I'm just kidding you. It's all right. What were you guys doing? He just let it roll. I was just like, oh. I remember watching Mr. Klein day in and day out. The way that he could be a dad. The way that he took care of Mrs. Klein. He'd take her away on these little getaways. Sometimes he'd bring home flowers. As a kid from a single parent family, when I'd be over there, I remember just watching these things. And just thinking, wow. Wow. I think for those reasons, when I got into kind of my early 20s, I got married young. So much of how I tried to be as a dad, as a husband, was fashioned after my memories of my time watching Mr. Klein. I might as well have been wearing the bracelet. What would Mr. Klein do? WWMK, man. There were times, I mean, even mowing my lawn. I remember how Mr. Klein would mow his lawn and he would do it at an angle. I thought, oh, that is so cool. I'm going to do that one day. And I did. Mr. Klein, if you ever hear this, I owe so much to him. Have you ever had someone in your life who's influenced you in such a dramatic way, left such an impression on you that you found yourself at times thinking and being challenged, inspired by that person? Maybe it was a friend, family member. Maybe it was an uncle or aunt. Maybe it was a prof or a teacher, a sports coach. Have you ever had someone in your life that left such a deep impression on you that they had a way of just inspiring you, pulling, calling out the best in you when it seemed others were unable? You know, it's hard to explain the influence someone can have on your life. What it is about those persons, you know, whether it's their track record, whether it's this character, the reasons why these people touch us so deeply, I think are probably, there's a million different reasons why. But I'm telling you, regardless of the reason, the influence is real, isn't it? The mark the way they can pull you out, it's real. That influence is what we want to talk about this morning. We want to talk about the influence that can pull you into a new way of living. That's what this morning's all about.
I had a friend who was on a holiday in Mexico. You know, usual holiday, sun, cervezas, all the good stuff. And she started to feel a little bit of pain in her stomach. You know, it was maybe bad guacamole, who knows, right? But it gets worse and worse and worse. And pretty soon she's thinking, I need to see a professional. But I'm stuck in Mexico. My Spanish is basically two cervezas, por favor. And so they go into Google and they look up hospitals. Now, this is what inspired me to think about. What would I do? What would you do if you're on a holiday in Mexico and suddenly you're thinking, I think something's really wrong with me? Like my appendix or, I don't know, something. What do you do? I'd probably go on Google and search up hospitals. Now, if that was the case, if you're in Mexico, possibly life-threatening issue going on with you, and you look up hospitals and you see two names of hospitals, and this is the two names of the hospitals, City Hospital or Samaritan Hospital, which one's going to tweak in your mind of like, I'm going to pick that one? Now, just to close the loop on my first story, my friend was okay. Surgery went well. Everything was fine. She's great. Her stomach modeling career is a bit over, but other than that, everything's fine. If you're looking at these two names of hospitals, which one do you pick? Yeah. There's something about Samaritan that just feels better. Right? Samaritans are good. They take care of people who are sick. You know, a hospital that's called that's got to be a good hospital, doesn't it? When I thought about this, I thought about where that word Samaritan comes from and why we have such a positive view of that word. It actually comes from a story that Jesus told 2,000 years ago, give or take. And the story starts with a gentleman going from one city to another city, and between him and this other city is kind of rough terrain. It's full of thieves and brigands. It's just bad. But anyways, he's got to go. So he starts walking, and of course, you know, he gets waylaid. They rob him. They beat the crap out of him. He's laying on the side of the road, dying. Now, the story, like all of Jesus' stories, it's not meant to be literal. He says clearly, this isn't literal. So in some senses, this story, the context of the story, someone in her life is beaten and bruised and laying on the side of life. It's a story from all of our lives, right? Our sick friends. Person broken down the side of the road. I was working on my bike the other day, and some guy comes over and he's like, I need help. I locked my keys in my car. People beaten on the side of the road of life are all over the place, aren't they? And sometimes they're not even obvious, like, you know, the guy saying, I need help. Sometimes it's the people who are the most successful but have no meaning in their life, no purpose. They don't even know why they're doing what they're doing. And so the story is set in our lives, looking around our lives going, there's people who need help. There's people who need our time and our attention. And Jesus tells the story that as the guy lays there beaten and bleeding, three people walk up to him. The first person walks up. He's of the same religious group as the guy who's beaten. They believe in the same, you know, religion. They believe in the same God. They call him the same thing. They do the same stuff. Everything's the same. These people are together. And the person walks up who's so connected to this person, sees him on the side of the road and goes, and just walks away, leaving the man to die. Second person comes along. Same thing. Political, completely connected politically. When you look at these people, you would even know that this person and this person, they're together. They're part of the same group. Person walks up, sees the guy beaten, and just walks away. The third person walks up. Jesus calls or describes him with one word, Samaritan. Now, in our understanding of these stories, in our way of understanding Samaritan, that's a good thing, right? You're broken down on the side of the road. Your car's broken down. And a good Samaritan walks up. You're like, oh, good. I'm saved. Whew. But what you don't understand is the original readers of this story, that word meant something absolutely different. A Samaritan was somebody who was completely different religiously than the guy who was beaten up. So think radical, you know, Muslim and fundamentalist Christian. Politically, they were completely different. Think, you know, Notley supporter and Kenny supporter, Trump and hate Trump supporter. You know, like this is like a gulf between them. They hate each other. Their groups hate each other. So in the context of the story, there's somebody on the side of road of life, beaten, got the crap kicked out of them. And essentially, his enemy walks up. That's what Samaritan means in the story. His enemy walks up and says, holy crap. He picks him up, puts him on his donkey, carries him to a hospital, pays for his medical bills, and takes care of him. And that's where we get the word Good Samaritan from. Just a show of hands, who has told a story in their life that they think will change language in 2,000 years? That's influence, isn't it? Jesus had the ability not only to change, kind of inspire us to live, he actually changed the words we use. And that's the core of the theory we want to talk about today. We've talked about the last two theories, penal substitution, Jeff talked about 2 weeks ago. Two full weeks ago. Talked about how it connects to our shame. Last week he talked about Christus Victor and talked about how this feeling of freedom and not having someone, you know, holding us down. This week we're talking about a theory called the moral influence theory. And all these theories are beautiful in their own way, right? They all have truth in them. I think the most profound truths are the truths that connect into something inside of us that just go, yeah, that's what I want. And Jesus' life, here's a character who lived 2,000 years ago, but something in the way he lived and taught and spoke, it's influential still. It's changed how we look at life. It's changed how people have lived their lives. It's caused people to give up everything. It's a beautiful story. And the moral influence theory doesn't talk about the death. It doesn't talk about resurrection. It talks about the life. And the influence that life has on each and every one of us. Because really, if we all imagined ourselves sitting at a funeral of someone that we love, and we hear the things that this person did in their lives, the impact that they've had, the people they've touched, the friends that they've made, the meaning their life has had, the significance their life has had. There's something powerful in that that inspires us, doesn't it? I don't know about you, but I don't want to live my whatever I get, 65 plus years, and have it be completely a waste. I did no good. I had no impact. I want a life of meaning, of significance. I want to change the world and make it a little bit better. And when we look at Jesus' life, this life of influence, and then we look at that core belief inside of us that says, no, I don't want to waste my life. I want to mean something. We find the moral influence theory, this idea that Jesus' life inspires each of us to live a meaningful life. To live a life of purpose. Now, when we first talked about this theory, probably, what do you think, 8 years ago? Plus or minus 5 years? Eight-ish. We're going to say eight-ish. I remember the days we started to talk about that. Because this theory, and now all the theories are beautiful. But this theory had a special resonance for us when we first heard it.
I remember the early days as we just, you know, like I grew up in the church, as many of you at least had early roots in the church. I just heard a lot of people arguing over a lot of different beliefs and what is the right thing and the wrong thing to believe. What would disqualify you from being a part of the club? What would send you to a bad place? And what would qualify you? After it was all said and done, it seemed like the later I got in life, the more I just didn't trust a religion that was just so full of talking. I think that's why this theory meant so much to us, because it was, the talking stopped. It was just saying, just pay attention to the way that this guy lived, the way that he touched people, the way he could walk into a room and spot the hurting person and say, come on. The person that was outcast, come on. You're sitting with me today. The way he just cut through the religion and lived in a way that shook people's lives and changed them. When we started wrestling with this theory, we're just like going, oh, that's it. No, let's just do that. Let's just make a church that just focuses there. And a way of life, an action-oriented way of life that would truly leave our world better. That if the church ever closed down, would leave the world around them going, no, please, please don't let that place shut down or those people within that community. It means too much to our city, to our community, to our world. We want that. So we start thinking, how can we keep the main thing? We start telling a story. And if you've been with us a long time, you've heard this story. And we just keep telling it again and again and again. It's called The Castle in the Well. It's a story of a landowner. She owned this piece of land, and on it they found this natural bubbling well, this water, spring of water. She had a well built around it to be able to capture the water. And this woman, she was in a generous landowner. People heard about her well of water and they asked her about it. They said, is there any way that we could have some? She never turned down one person. She said, if you ask for it, you got it. She shared it generously. And as a result, the village and the area around her land prospered. Unbelievably. People coming from far and wide to access this beautiful water. One day she gets called away on business. And so her and her family, they pack up and they head out. But she leaves the care of the well and that land in the hands of a few people from the community. They leave, and in a short time, the fighting begins to happen. The arguing over who deserves the water. Some of these people with bad track records, you know what? I don't know if they really are deserving. And we're worried that that person is taking a little more than their fair share. The scarcity mindset starts to build. We got to control how much water is going out right now because these people are just coming in. Some people think they just deserve this. So what do? They start building a wall around this well to control access. Little narrow opening. Gatekeepers sitting at that opening, controlling who goes in and gets the water. And over a short amount of time, things drastically change in that community. Those chosen few have all the water they could ever use, while the surrounding area begins to suffer from drought. The landowner catches wind of something going on around the well. So she sends her son to investigate. She says, just go back and just see what's going on. The sun shows up and the land, everything that he remembered looks so different. It's struggling. It's dry. People are downcast, sad. He comes to the place where he remembers the well-being and he just sees this big wall. And he walks around this, comes to this opening and he says, where's the well? A guy comes up and looking at the son, he says, who are you? He says, my mother owns this land, owns that well that somehow is somewhere in there. And this is not the way this was meant to be played out. So you're the owner. Come on in. Whatever. He comes in and begins to tell them what this well was meant to be about. He begins sharing the stories of what this land looked like back when they once lived here, when that water was shared. People within those walls begin to hear the stories and something begin to soften. They said, well, hey, you know what? Okay. They began grabbing pails and getting that water. They began carrying it outside those walls to people in their communities who were desperately in need. Word began to spread. People started coming back, getting access. Pretty soon that narrow opening was too restrictive. They began breaking down the walls, cracking it wide open so anyone who needed water could get it. It was a wonderful thing. It was like this revolution started. And once again, the village was buzzing. People hearing water was once again available. But you know what? There was a few people within the walls who didn't like what was going on. And they conspired and they had the son executed, taken out. And though that revolution was exciting for a while, it got snuffed out. And before long, the walls around that well began to be built again. Only this time they said, no, none of these temporary stuff. The walls began to form a castle. Until one point, it was pretty much locked up, the surrounding area suffering from drought, while a few chosen people sat inside that castle with more water than they would ever use. That story we've told here at Friends Church for years now. And we tell it because we say we cannot forget as a community the main thing that we saw in the life of Jesus. And that was this attitude, this way of living that said, no, you take water to your world. And we defined water as anything that you got, skills, talents, time, resources, anything you got that you can give that will make your world better. We don't know what your water is. Every one of you, I'm looking at each one of you and the kinds of different kinds of water that you have used to take water to your world. There's a thousand different ways that you have been taking water. But we said we will be a church. We will not ever become a place that's about building the walls for a chosen few. This whole thing is not about what happens in here. It's what happens when we step outside. Love in a needy world.
I could probably tell you 100, I don't even know how many stories of this action in life. But I want to tell you just a few. We want to tell you a few today. Sitting with a couple a little while ago, you know, young kids, blended family, work, life, taxing people. Like, their lives were just busy. You could tell they weren't connecting. They're struggling. And I had them sit down and just face each other and just look at each other's eyes. You know, the thing you do when you're dating and you're in love and you're like, wow, yeah, this feels amazing. And they couldn't do it. Kept looking around, making jokes. They've been where we always were, you know. They wanted connection so desperately, but they couldn't figure out how to do it. They couldn't figure out how to get there. And, you know, with all of that going on, how could it not be that way? And you could just see inside them. And this is how all coupledom seems to work. Maybe not all, but most, myself included. It's the, well, I'll do for them when they do for me, right? And I want them to do it first. So you're both sitting there waiting going, well, if he does it first or if she does it first, then I will do the thing that I need to do and the thing they're asking me to do. And what happens is you both are waiting and it's just this downward spiral of waiting for the other person to go first until that thing just craters. It's just, it's human nature. And it seems like that's exactly where they were in that space of going, well, you know, I want and he wants, but if he And so I knew the guy better. And I, you know, as I sat there, I said, you could just tell like the distance, like it was physical. I knew him better. So I said, hey, would you just move towards your partner? Just move towards her in love. And as I'm watching them, her energy just comes up. She's just like, oh, if he does not. Like this was a moment that if he F's this up, this is going to go bad. Like, it's going to hurt her so deeply. And I watched him sitting there, and it was like he was doing this incredible amount of math in his head. Right? And then I saw this switch go, click. He took a deep breath. He took a step towards his partner.
there was this beautiful moment of not, it's all about me, and she did this to me, and I'm hurt, and I need this. It was a moment where he was like, I can take water to the person I love right here, right now. The relationship wasn't solved that day. But 5 minutes later, they're holding each other, laughing with each other, giggling. There was real connection there. Now, folks, if I would have known her better, she could have probably done it too. It just needed the one person to say, I can do something in this relationship to take the first step towards the other, to start to build that connection. But to me, when I think of the castle in the wall story, when I think of the moral influence theory of a life of meaning, I think of stories like that, where somebody was willing to take the first step in the relationship and start to create connection.
Yeah, I have all kinds of different examples of water stories. I was just at the back last week. I walked in and saw a gentleman who had been on our recent Mexico humanitarian house building mission. And he was an unlikely candidate. He was 75 years old. He said some of the kids were referring to him as grandpa on the trip. This cub. I said, cub, how did it go? And the music had already started playing. The service was getting going. And I just looked and I said, hey, how did it go? And instantly he was emotional. I said, are you okay, pal? He says, that trip changed my life. He mentioned three things before I could push him away to sit down. He was so excited to tell me. He said, you know, I don't work with teenagers much. So I was a little nervous how these teens that would go on this trip would be on the work site and whether all the work would fall onto some guys like me. He said, to see those kids, like he says, these are teenagers. Hike and gravel, mixing concrete, slaving long hours. He says, I was so busted, but I watching them dig deep with these big smiles on their faces as the families we're trying to help are working alongside. These kids were so excited to be building a home for these people in such a tough place. He said, to watch these kids shook me up. I have never seen such a desire to make a difference in teenagers. He said, then the key ceremony came. He said, that moment when you turn the keys over to this family, he said, I was not prepared for how crazy that would be. This family are coming apart. They're so grateful for what we've done. But to see where they were living to this, he says, oh, he said, it just wrecked me. He says, I was wrecked. But he says, you know, the moment that changed me was one night I'm sitting around the fire and I'm talking with one of our translators who's been on the ground with us right from day one, right through. He's been translating every time we need to speak with someone in Spanish. His name is Marlon. He said, Marlon is now married. He's got a very young family. Seemed like just such a quality guy. He says, I'm sitting with Marlon around the campfire one night. And I asked Marlon how he ended up doing this. How was he translating for this organization and whatever? And he says, Marlon looked at him and he says, oh, you don't know? Cuz says, what? No, I don't. What are you talking about? He said, 10 years ago. That was my family that Friends Church came down and built a home for. It was me helping you guys as you were building this home. It was my home. You guys built for me. He said, that home and what that did for our family, you can never know. It changed me. He said, my life was going like this, and all of a sudden, it just started doing this. He said, since then, I've started up this sport ministry. I'm helping kids in danger in crazy, dangerous lifestyles.
get out. They had just negotiated for a kid to get out of a cartel. He was a young kid, didn't know better. They negotiate, get him out. He's now playing on a soccer team that this Marlin is leading. Cuff's listening to this. He's going, 10 years later, that's what we could be doing by taking water like this. He was a wreck at the back of the service. So was I, mind you.
You know, we could probably tell you hundreds of stories. We could spend all day telling you stories. One last one. There's one person in the community that inspires me regularly. She's kind of like my Vince, you're a selfish bugger kind of person. She shows up the other day. It's 4 p.m, I think. She's got 2 kids sleeping in her van. Her husband's an accountant, and it's tax season, so she owns her own business. She's just starting up a whole expansion on her business. Like, she is to the edge of what she can do. And she stops in the middle of the day, drives from the deep south here to pick up some chocolate baskets. I don't know if you guys saw it on Friends Helping Friends. There's a grandmother who's taking care of her grandkids. I don't know exactly what happened, but I think she's the primary care person now, and she doesn't have enough to even buy them some chocolate for Easter. And so my friend drives all the way up from the south in a crazy time to pick up the stuff that we had collected so that a grandmother and her kids can have an amazing Easter. Talk about somebody who gets taking water. You know, when her funeral happens, there will be hundreds of people telling stories of what she did in their lives. And we could probably go on, you know, the people who raise money for cancer and MS and Alzheimer's, and the people who do little things that they don't even tell us about, the people who do big things that, you know, we can't even speak to.
You are volunteering in organizations that no one knows the hours you're putting in. Some of you are giving stuff away. You're giving your time, your attention, your energy, and family members and friends, reaching out to people that just need a helping hand. We watch it.
Some of you are in that relationships period where you're just taking that first step. You know, I've hurt you, and I want to say sorry, or we're disconnected, and I want to reconnect. Mm-hmm. This is the moral influence theory.
Yeah.
And this one has rung our bell for years. And my guess is many of you in the crowd today, it's ringing your bell. You're going, I want to live a life of meaning and significance. I want to take water to people in my world. That story of casting the wall, you're going, yeah, that's my story. That's what I want.
May we be a water-carrying community. This Easter, we celebrate what Jesus role modeled for us. We take our cues from him. You may be in the situation right now where down deep you hear that, you feel the nudge saying, no, you first. Vince talked about in a relationship. Maybe you got to get on the phone. You got to make something right. Maybe you're going to sit around the table again with someone who there's been some bitter words, some history. Maybe this week you've got an opportunity to just make someone's day or week. Shit, let's make a difference with the time we got. You can. Today we celebrate Easter and our opportunity to live like Christ in our world. Frickin' take the opportunity, would you? Let's make it. Let's make a difference. Let's light up our world. Jesus, you're a candle. Don't hide your light. Let it shine so that those people in a dark place can see it and acknowledge there's something real inside of you. Something real in this world that's worth it. All right, that's all I got. You want to close up with something? Oh, yeah, right.
I love it. If you resonated with this, there's a story from Jesus that he talks, well, actually, there's many stories. The story goes like this. Jesus did a whole bunch of stuff, and then he took off to the mountains to be by himself. He did a whole bunch of cool things, and then he went away where there's no people to recharge. Jesus did this amazing thing, and then he went off to himself to be by himself to just find connection with who he is and what he believed.
How many of us need more connection to that soul part of us? Especially right now as it's getting more sunny out and life is getting crazier, busier as the end of the school year happens. And it's just like we're just doing more and more and more and more, but there's no connection to here, is there? That deep soul. If that resonates with you, we're starting a series called Soul Care. It starts next week. It'll run for 3 weeks. And it's about how we find connection to who we are and the healthiest version of ourselves. So we're not blowing through the wind of life just trying to keep our heads above water. Okay? If that resonates, we'll see you next week. Have a great week, everyone. Take water. We'll see you.